Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to the third episode of Human Conditions, a podcast for the London Review of Books and part of our Close Reading series. I'm your host, Adam Schatz, and with me is the philosopher Judith Butler. The subject of this episode's conversation is Frantz Fanon's 1952 book, Black Skin, White Masks. Black Skin, White Masks is a short study of the impact of racism on the Black psyche, as well as on the white psyche. It's partly based on clinical observations that Fanon made as a young psychiatrist in Lyon. The book is organized into 7 chapters, including a chapter on language, 2 chapters on interracial relationships, a chapter on ideas about colonization, on recognition, on psychopathology. Judith Butler has decided to focus on 3 chapters in the book: the lived experience of the Black man and recognition, and the conclusion. Walter Benjamin wrote that all great works of literature either found a genre or dissolve one. Fanon's first book arguably does both, turning the genre of psychiatric analysis into a weapon of radical political critique, while interweaving clinical observations with passages of scalding humor and declamatory interludes in which he addresses the reader directly. It's a strange, sometimes disorienting, but always compelling combination of cool, detached observation rendered in a highly specialized psychiatric jargon and visceral expressionistic monologue. At the time of writing, Fanon was a medical student in Lyon. He was born in 1925 in Martinique, and at the age of 19 joined the Free French Forces in the battle against fascism in Europe. After the war, he came to Lyon to study psychiatry. His first book, Black Skin, White Masks, originally submitted as his dissertation and rejected, was published in 1952 with Seuil. His editor, Francis Janson, was a philosopher close to Jean-Paul Sartre, who, like Fanon, had fought with the resistance to fascism during the war. And it was, in fact, Janson who suggested the title. The original title had been an essay on the disalienation of the Black man. Fanon's first book wasn't widely read at the time, but it has since become a defining statement on the experience of racism, on its psychological impact, and on the formation of Black consciousness. Judith, I thought we'd start by talking about your first encounter with Black Skin, White Masks. Can you give us an account of that?
I'm not sure that I remember the very first time that I read it. But I do know that when I had a job at Johns Hopkins many years ago, I realized that there was really no one there teaching race or postcolonial studies in the humanities. It was a very Europe-centered department, and I belonged to the degree that I was formed in European philosophy, but there was nothing in postcolonial theory. And I remember speaking to my friend Barbara Johnson, who said, look, when I was in French, there was nobody doing postcolonial or race. So as a white person, I had to do it myself, and I had to establish the field. And then once you establish the field, you can go to the deans and say, we need positions in this field. So I took this to be a task that I was happily willing to undertake. And it was clear to me that people read Sartre, they read Simone de Beauvoir. They didn't read Fanon. They didn't understand that Fanon was part of that constellation, that Fanon and Merleau-Ponty and Jaspers and Freud and Lacan and Hegel were all there together as a constellation, and all could be found in various ways, directly or indirectly, in Fanon's text. And in addition, I mean, it was clear to me that as a text, this is extremely interesting for literary students because there's so many voices multiplying in this work. To whom is he speaking? In what voice is he speaking? Is he speaking in the voice of the racist? Is he speaking in the voice of the black man? The black man is construed by another, the black man as he construes himself. Maybe not the black man, maybe one black man, perhaps many black men. And the quick way in which he moves between styles immediately kind of convinced me that even those who maybe had no relation to this text or were eager to have one but didn't know how to find their way could be brought in simply by paying close attention to the language and the extraordinary suffering to which this text testifies.
There's a multiplicity of voices, as you pointed out. There's also a multiplicity of registers, of philosophical, phenomenological, psychoanalytic, literary, poetic.
That's very true. In fact, sometimes the question form seems to overtake the text. Who am I? Who are you? Very fundamental questions that we think of as belonging to philosophy, but also they take the form of appeals or petitions or even sometimes cries. Who am I, or what will this world let me be? Who are you? And in fact, as we might talk about later, at the very end of the text, there is a kind of prayer. Maybe we could call it a secular prayer to the other, to the world.
This, oh my body, make of me always a man who questions.
Yeah, perhaps appealing to his own body in a most interesting way.
Now, you've chosen to focus on three chapters. The first is the lived experience of the black man. The second is the black man in recognition. And the third is by way of conclusion, en guise de conclusion. But I thought we might start by talking a little bit about the title, Black Skin, White Masks. What is the significance of this title, Judith?
Well, as I understand it, he's treating the question of the color of skin in relationship to a social function that black men in particular, but arguably black women as well, although that's a debate, are compelled to take on. So on the one hand, he seems to be indexing assimilation. I have black skin, but I wear a white mask, and I wear that white mask for you, white man, in order to be recognized as a human. But the peau noire, comma, suggests that we don't know what the relationship is between that skin and that mask. In other words, there seems to be a disjunction or maybe a simple sequence. And of course, he also is trying to figure out how to live in that skin and to doff that mask, since in his view, one has to enter into a certain kind of lived experience of blackness in order to find one's way toward freedom and even toward arguably a different notion of the human. So the white mask is there to appease white people who want to see some simulacrum of themselves, but it's also an expose of a mask that keeps the person who is masked from living fully and asking the questions that any living creature would ask.
And there is a suggestion, too, that the white mask is not simply a kind of assimilationist code switching. It's something that, by virtue of the French education system under colonialism, has been deeply imprinted on the black psyche, too.
That's right. And for him in particular, educated as he was in European letters and philosophy and psychology, he read deeply in European literature and philosophy, and he was formed in part by that education. But that formation, in that formation or throughout that formation, he could not find himself, or he found himself only marked as the other or set aside as the primitive or as the child, especially in developmental ideas of civilization. So there he is as an intellectual reading all this European material, trying to find himself, not finding himself, or finding himself in a damaged or subordinated way, and seeking to not exactly throw off that formation, but to find his way in and through the margins of suffering produced by those texts and by their fundamentally racist presumptions.
Now, the first chapter that you've chosen is arguably the central chapter of this book, The Lived Experience of the Black Man. It was mistranslated into English for many years as The Fact of Blackness. He writes at the beginning of this chapter that he's come into the world anxious to uncover the meaning of things, his soul full of desire to be at the origin of the world, and instead he finds himself an object among other objects. And he continues, locked into this suffocating objectification, I think the term he uses is thingification, I appeal to the other so that his liberating gaze gliding over my body, suddenly smoothed of rough edges, would give me back the lightness of being I thought I had lost, and taking me out of the world, put me back in the world. But just as I get to the other slope, I stumble, and the other fixes me with his gaze, his gestures and his attitude, the same way you fix a preparation with a die. I lose my temper, demand an explanation. Nothing doing. I explode. Here are the fragments put together by another me. It's an arresting passage, but can you help us to unpack it?
It starts, of course, with the famous line. I guess it's even hard for me to say, so I'm just going to say part of it. Look, a Negro, which refers to the scene in a train where a young white boy looks over at him and says to his mother, look, a Negro, as if this is some kind of circus animal or strange exotic being, or expressing shock that a black man would be sharing the same train cabin as he and his mother. And the child is, of course, shameless and ignorant in the pointing out, but the child is also reproducing a fundamental structure of racism, one that we might call epistemic, a way of seeing, a way of knowing. So that white child is already inside the structures of a racist perception and a shameless racist perception when he says, look, maman, tiens, un nègre, you know, look, a Negro. Then there's the I, there's the subjective first person that emerges in response to this, what's called here a suffocating reification, but maybe in the French, it's an effacing objectivity. Fanon refers to himself as encapsulated or contained by an effacing objectivity or reification. And so there is this I, this first person. I came into the world, in other words, when he was an infant, I came into the world anxious to uncover the meaning of things, my soul desirous to be at the origin of the world. In other words, I had a naive, authentic desire to know the world. I came into the world before racism gripped me and all those around me. I came in here as a subject seeking to know the world. And now, who am I? I am an object among objects. I have become a thing. An objet.
Thanks for listening to this extract from Human Conditions, a close reading series from the London Review of Books. To listen to the full episode and all our other close reading series, sign up to our close reading subscription at lrb.me/close readings or click on the link in the description.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.